Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. At the mall, we're assailed by lights, trees, tinsel, ornaments, and all sorts of holiday cheer. What you won't find is much about Christ, whose coming is the reason for the season. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Dr. Lutzer begins a Christmas series from Isaiah on Christ before Bethlehem. Join us now as we hear a message about Christ the Son.
You know that there's a war against Christmas out there, and I think that the war is very real. The question is whether or not the Capitol tree can still be called the Christmas tree. Question of whether or not stores can say to their customers Merry Christmas, or if they have to say Happy Holidays. Not going to comment on that war particularly, though it is interesting. You know, I think the time might come when if you tell someone Merry Christmas, someone might file a lawsuit because they were insulted or offended that you used the word. Be interesting to see where we end up sometime. But I'm more concerned today about something else, and that is another war against Christmas, and that is the misunderstanding on the part of the people of God as to why we celebrate Christmas. That's more serious. Is Christmas simply a time when we can get together and we can have parties and we can give gifts and we're with relatives and friends and make a few comments about Jesus and read the Christmas story and be done with it for another year? No. To Christians, Christmas is something much more profound than that. It is the intervention of God on a world that has gone amok. That's what Christmas is. Imagine these words being applied to any city in America, or any city in Rwanda, or any city in the world. How about these words? Distress, darkness, gloom, and thick darkness. Those are the words that describe the situation with two tribes by the name of Zebulun and Naphtali. The text today is the 9th chapter of the Gospel of Isaiah, or the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 9, and he is talking about gloom and darkness and difficulty. Let me give you the background to Isaiah 9. There was a king reigning by the name of Ahaz who reigned for 16 years. He was an evil king. And Isaiah said to him, now, you're having problems because two nations are getting together to war against you. Trust God and everything will be okay. But Ahaz said to himself, I'm not going to trust God. Would you mark it down that when we choose to not trust God and we choose to trust someone else or something else, usually we trust someone or something that is a disappointment to us. And Ahaz said, I'm going to call in Assyria, and Assyria is going to help me. Assyria, those days, very wicked people, untrustworthy, deceitful. So he actually reaches out to Assyria for help, and when Assyria comes to help him, Assyria begins to take over, and Assyria begins to demand tribute, and soon the latter end of Ahaz is worse than his beginning. What happens to people when they are in a situation where leaders have made political decisions that have impacted them? Where the strong have taken advantage over the weak, where a wicked king makes a decision that impacts his subjects. Zebulun and Naphtali were two of the great tribes that were greatly affected. They're the ones who existed near the Sea of Galilee. And when invaders would come, they would come from the north, right past the Sea of Galilee, and they were the ones that were being overrun, taken advantage of. And that's the description I read just a few moments ago. They were in a situation of gloom and darkness and distress. But when the 9th chapter opens of Isaiah, it's a word of hope. It says, for example, that the gloom that existed in Naphtali and Zebulun was going to be taken away. Verse 2, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Verse 3, you have multiplied the nation, you have increased the joy. Verse 4, the yoke of the oppressor is going to be lifted. Verse 5, all of the implements of war are going to be burned because peace is going to come. And the question is, who is it that's going to bring about this miracle? Who is it that is going to bring about this reversal of fortune so that things are going to be different in Zebulun and Naphtali? Who's going to do it? And the answer is there in verse 6, for unto us a child is born. That's a strange answer to a difficult political problem. But the answer is that it's a child that is born. God says, I have an answer. Now, Jesus Christ's birth was still a ways off. But when Jesus Christ comes to the earth in Matthew chapter 4, he spends a lot of time in Galilee, in that area. Why? To fulfill a part of this prophecy. Not the entire prophecy by any means, but a part of it, that there is some light beginning to shine. And the gloom is dissipating, not permanently, but at least for a time. But God does have a permanent solution to a very difficult problem. Well, that's the introduction. Who is then this one who's going to change the political fortune of a country ravaged by war and distress and injustice and hatred and massacre? Who is it? A child. Let's look at his characteristics. First of all, we notice something about his origin. It is special. For unto us a child is born, a son is given, verse 6. Notice that the text is very accurate in terms of its terminology. The child being born is the humanness of Jesus, and the son being given is the eternality, the sonship of Jesus that is an eternal sonship. It is the divinity of Jesus, if you please. That's what it is. Notice that Isaiah does not say, for unto us a son is born and a child is given. No, no, it is the child that is born, but the son is given, because his goings forth have been from of old and from everlasting, and he is the one, you see, who is eternal. Jesus was born as the son of David. That's the child that was given. But he was also born as the son of God, and that's why the text says that it is the child that is born, but it is the son that is given. Jesus is both God and man. He is both human, and he is also divine. And it's right here in the text. When Jesus came to this earth in Bethlehem, it wasn't his first visit to this planet by any means. In our series on the life of Abraham, we noticed that Jesus was coming in various theophanies in the Old Testament, but Even more than that, Jesus also was here as God. His goings forth have been from of old and from everlasting. He has a special origin. He also has special names. What a verse this is, verse 6. Contains more names than any other verse in all the Bible. Four names are given to Jesus, and names in those days were very descriptive. And in this case, they are in couplets of two. Therefore, its meaning is very, very plain. Who is this one with these marvelous names? He's the wonderful counselor. That word wonderful in Hebrew, pele, actually means supernatural, means the supernatural counselor. It means the one who has miraculous power. Gideon, when he saw the angel, he said, "Who are you?" And the angel said, "My name is Wonderful." And Gideon said to his wife, "We have seen God." Ah, yeah, we have seen God. He is a wonderful counselor. He is a counselor who can help us. He's the one who comes to us in our need. He can be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. That's what kind of a counselor he is. I want to take a moment to contrast him today with human counselors. Jesus Christ is one who has all knowledge. When you go to a human counselor, you have to sit there a long time and explain everything. And then if it's marriage counseling, your wife comes along and she explains everything. And at the end of the day, he doesn't know what in the world to believe. Isn't that right? Everybody has his different spin. Jesus has all knowledge. Every single detail is known. You say, well, is it okay for me to spill out my soul to Jesus? And the answer is yes, but you're doing it for your benefit, not for his. It's not to teach him anything, not that he's going to learn finally what your real problem is, because he has all knowledge. He has all power. For all power is given unto me in heaven and on earth. Go ye therefore. He has all authority. And then here's something. All of his advice and all that he does for us is free. Isn't that good news? Now, if you're here today as a psychoanalyst or a psychologist, I am banking on the hope that you have a sense of humor, because I'm going to tell a story. A man was walking along and he saw two doors. One said psychologist and the other said psychoanalyst. And he didn't know which one to go into, so he counted the letters and discovered that psychoanalyst has more letters than psychologist or psychiatrist. So he decided to go in through the one that said psychoanalyst. And when he walked in that door, he noticed two other doors. One said with a couch or without a couch. He said, well, since I've come this far, he said, I might as well choose the one with a couch. So he went through that door. And then he came to two other doors, $200,000 a year income or less than $200,000 a year income. He thought, well, I don't make $200,000 a year. So he went through that door and discovered that he was back out on the street. All right. Some of you aren't laughing. That's troubling. I'm not saying it's wrong to pay for some good advice and some counseling, but what you come to Jesus when you come to him. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. He that hath no money, come ye buy milk and meat without price. To whomever believes, I will give to him of the water of life freely. And remember this, he has no office hours. What a marvelous counselor we have. And of course, as we approach the Christmas season, we're reminded of our Savior who is unique. That is to say that there's no one else like him. No religious leader, nobody who is able to speak with the authority with which he spoke, no one who made the claims that he made. Let us celebrate with joy. I have in my hands a book. And this book is very unique. It's entitled A Closer Look at the Evidence. It's written by two scientists. It has 365 pages, one for every day of the year. Most of them are full color. It has to do with showing the uniqueness of the Bible and how science is indeed subject to the scriptures, and we can go on believing God's word, taking it literally. And it is because of this that we are able to stabilize our faith. Love for you to have it. The book is entitled A Closer Look at the Evidence. And I want to thank you in advance for helping us as we continue this ministry right here on Running to Win. And I'll see you right here next time.
Erwin Lutzer, introducing Christ the Son, the first of four messages on Christ before Bethlehem. Next time, we'll focus in greater detail on the names ascribed to Christ in Isaiah's prophecy. This month, we have a special gift for all who share their gifts with Running to Win. Richard and Tina Kleiss have written a daily devotional book called A Closer Look at the Evidence, Perspectives on Creation and Why the Bible and Science Are in Harmony. This book will be sent when you call 1-800-215-5001 with your gift. That's 1-800-215-5001. Or write to us at Running to Win, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.